Hello again. This is a recording of a teaching session which occurred on June 17th, 1997, here at Holden Village. This session is entitled Traditional versus Christian Rituals or Similarities. And the presenter is Sister Rosina Ampa. Now let's join Sister Rosina.
My name is the Reverend Sister Rosina Ampa, and I am an Episcopal sister with the Order of St. Helena. We've been dealing with the word community, citing it from Ephesians 2, from 19 to the end of chapter 2. And the theme is we are no longer strangers. And so we believe that God put us in community. And we've been dealing with the series about community since last week. And this is the sixth and last of the series. And so today I am going to be dealing with rituals. Rituals from the African point of view, the African traditional religion, and also look at it from the Christian point of view. What ritual entails and what rituals does for us. And so I'm going to be talking about rituals. And before we get into the talk, I want to say a few prayers from the Book of Common Prayer. O God, you have made of one blood all the peoples of the earth, and sent your blessed Son to preach peace to those who are far off and to those who are near. Grant that people everywhere may seek after you and find you. Bring the nations into your fold. Pour out your Spirit upon all flesh, and hasten the coming of your kingdom through Jesus Christ our Lord.
Amen.
And as I said, this is the last series of the topic I've been dealing with, and is community. And today's is specifically about rituals. I want to look into the rituals of the African traditional religion, especially from Ghana, and also the church's rituals. Yesterday, I talked about the belief system in Ghana and how it operates for the people. And there is a saying in Africa, and typically in Ghana, that I am because you are. So when we talk about community, we really mean community. I exist because you all exist. I don't live in isolation. And so when you ask an African, who are you? They cannot just say, I am alone, because the rest of the community comes with them. And so you move from one generation to the other. So you didn't just drop from the ceiling or drop from the sky or being born in a vacuum. You have the ancestors who have gone ahead of you. That's your past. And then you have the present, and the present moves you into the future. So when an African traditional person is praying, they are not only looking into the people who are present. They pray from the past to the present and to the future. So they are all intertwined. You cannot separate one from the other. And so it's very intricate when it comes to spirituality and prayer. And that's what calls for also the rituals. And the ritual meaning what we do when a child is born, when somebody dies, and interim the living, because they are all connected to each other. also another area to look at it from is that an African will never do anything without first invoking God. They will not say tomorrow, I'm going to do this or that, without saying, if God permits. And it's part of the language that is so funny that sometimes when you try to translate it in English, it doesn't sit right because English does not do that. And so when you are speaking regularly in your culture, it's part of it. You just tell your friend, I'm going to bed, I'll see you tomorrow. In English, you go. But in my culture, what they will say is, I'm going to bed, and if God opens the door tomorrow, I will see you. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the structure. And so the life is all intertwined with God. An African child believes that without God, there won't be me. And so your life is intertwined with God. And there are a lot of sayings that depict that. Here, it's either God using to be a male or female, and we struggle with language. But because of the culture and the way it is structured, God is neutral. And you use words to really say what you want to say about God. For example, when you look into the Jewish Bible, you will see that God is sometimes used as the rock, as the light, as this. Ghanaian language has all those kind, and sometimes I like this particular one, that God is depicted as a mother who has enough breast to feed everybody at the same time. And it's very interesting because sometimes we feel that if God is taking care of this person, how can God take care of me? And so it's structured in the language knowing that God can take care of all of us at the same time. You don't have to really struggle and fight over it because God has enough breast to feed all of us. So the whole culture itself is the language, the actions, and everything. Let's take libation pouring. That's part of the traditional way of praying. People pour libation when they want to pray, say prayers. They will take gin and then they will pour. But first of all, in order to do that, let's pretend this is the gin. They will open the bottle and they will pour some to a glass. And the first thing they will do is they will lift it up to God. And the saying is, in the prayer is, God, we show you this wine, but we don't give you the wine. We show it to you for blessing. And then they will pour to the ground first, and you give to Mother Earth, who nurtures you and provides for you. You call Mother Earth to come and drink. So you pour some of the drink. And then you will call the ancestors who have gone ahead of you to come take the drink. Also, Africans believe that...
What do you do for the ancestors? You pour it on the ground?
You, as you did, every name you call, you pour some to the ground. Yeah. Every name you call, you pour some to the ground. And you call them to come and participate in what you are doing. Also, the Africans believe that we are surrounded by the unseen world. We are living among spirits. And some, we don't see them, but they do see us. And so when they are praying like this, they will invite the spirits to also come and participate. But the important part I want to stress here is what they do is they know all spirits are not good. Some are wild and evil. But what they will do is they will invite them to also come and drink but leave. They will say, take this drink and then leave. And then they will invite the good ones that they believe support us and guide us in doing what we do right to stay.
Do they invite them by name?
No, because you don't know.
All of them.
You don't know the names. Your ancestors, you do know. And even the ancestors, sometimes if you have direct people who are gone, they call them by name.
Okay.
And so you know their name. But then they pour and invite all the ancestors, because there are some we do not know who have carried this people all to the stage. And so they will use the word impenyinufu, meaning all the elders who have gone. And so you see, the language is very inclusive, that when you try to translate it in English, it's very difficult. And so they call them also to come and participate. And then they will call the spirits, those unseen spirits, also to come and participate. But the evil ones should participate and leave. Just take some and leave. And then they will invite the good spirits to stay and help them deal with whatever they are dealing with.
How do they make the difference between the evil and the good?
Okay.
Would they say all you bad spirits leave?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That sometimes it's really very hard for the belief system of another country to interpret. Let's take the Sleeping Beauty, for example. It's a fairy tale, right? But look at what happened. They invited all the fairies to come to what they were doing, but there was one wicked fairy that nobody didn't want. And so they didn't invite that wicked fairy. But the wicked fairy came anyway. And what happened? The result was terrible. And luckily, there was one good one who hadn't spoken yet. And so she changed the death to sleeping. You see, the wicked one said to die. But then because there was one good one left who hasn't spoken, and so she did what? Turn it and said, you will sleep to a certain point until such a princess comes in. And so sometimes, you know, these things, people consciously or unconsciously, they will dream about it and write about it, but then they don't know whether what they are talking about is real or not. But in the African world, because it's built into the system, one does not do things just, you know, throwing things around. You don't. And there are certain times they even tell you, if you don't like people, just don't drag their names, trying to talk about them all the time, because you don't know who is listening. And you don't know what may happen to them. And so don't drag other people. But these are part of the things they do to really safeguard the community, because they know that this world doesn't belong to just them alone, the living. There may be other people living that we cannot see. And that's why when we say seen and unseen in the church's creed, you are talking about who? I mean, when you say the unseen, what are you referring to? So the African people bring it to a reality for you to know that you are surrounded by other spirits. And so don't drag other people's name, because you don't know what somebody else may take it or where they may take it. So when a new child is born, I'm going to go to a specific ritual. And I talked a little bit about this naming ceremony that brings the whole community together. The child is kept indoors for 8 days with the mother. The mother doesn't go anywhere except from going to bathe herself, come in and be with the child. She's taken care of for 8 days. On the eighth day, the whole community comes out to name that child. And the naming ceremony is performed by the head of the family. He comes in And the name that is going to be given to the child, the whole community will sit. They will cook, and it's early morning. And they will pour libation, thanking God and the ancestors who helped the woman through pregnancy and delivery safely up to today. And now they will thank also for the baby being alive, because normally they say when the baby is not 8 days yet, the baby is partly still in the spirit world. And that's why they wait till 8 days to give the name to the baby. And so when the baby is named, there is a ritual that goes with it. And there is a drink involved. They will put the baby on the lap of the mother or grandmother, or sometimes the father's sister. And the elder will pray and talk to the child. And they will give the child the name, and then the elder will have two glasses of different, and one is wine and one is water. And what the elder does is, the elder dip the finger in the water and touch the baby's mouth and says to the baby, when you taste water, say it's water. And then dip a finger in the wine and dip it on the baby's lip and says to the baby, this is wine. And when you taste wine, say it's wine. And they do that 3 times with each. And what they are doing or saying to the child is, be truthful. Say the truth. Don't drink wine and say it's water. Or don't drink water and when you are asked, say, I'm drunk. I drank wine. And all what they are saying to the child is, grow up and be truthful in the community. Say the truth. Don't lie. And so they will then give the name, and they will welcome the baby into the community, and the baby's community life begins.
Who chooses the name specifically, or do the parents have any input? Or
It comes from the father's background, the father's family. Normally, the child belongs to the mother's clan, but the names comes from the father's family. And so you combine the two. And there are times when a couple married for a while and has several children, the husband will name also the background of the woman. But basically, the children bear the father's name.
Do they have the clan name attached to their name?
The day of the week that you are born. That's what attached to your name. If you are born on a Monday, you get a middle name, whatever name they give you, you have that as your middle name. And that's the name they will actually, when they are doing the symbol for you, they will ask you, they will tell you, that's the name you bear. That's the day you were born. That's when you became a human being. And so that's the day, that's the name you carry.
Is this true of your name?
Yeah, I have a middle name. My name is Araba.
And that means you were born on
Tuesday.
And Rosina is?
Is my baptismal name.
Is it in your father's family?
No, that's a chosen name that my dad loved. And I have another name that came from my father's grandmother. And that's the name they will give to you when you are named on the 8th day. So the name that I was given, the old lady's name was Ama Eche. And so when I go home, they never called me Rosina. When I go to my father's background, they always call me mother, grandmother, or Nana Eche. Nana means the grandmother. So they will use the Nana before they use the name. Even when my dad was alive, when I do something and my dad forget and use that name, Mami Eche, that's it. He won't say anything. And he normally, you know, will call me when I'm doing something wrong, want to get my attention, use the day I was born, but then he will forget. And use his grandmother's name because it's part of it. And then he will say, then he stops. Because I have seen elder people buying drink and going to the family and will say, take the name from that child. I didn't know you gave me that name in order to insult me. So take that name off that child. I don't want to be insulted. So you respect that name that you've given to that child. And the belief is you respect that a person or people. That's why you name your child after them. And so if you're going to be insulting and abusing the child, then it's like you're just treating that old lady unfairly. So they will ask you, just take the name of the child. So in a way, traditionally, that's where the symbolism of ushering that child into the community comes in. That's the ritual that goes with it. Let's move into our Christian ritual because I want to balance it side by side as I go. I look at baptism the same way. When a child is being baptized, as at least in the Episcopal Church, you have godparents who are going to stand in for that child and make sure that child is raised in the church. The larger community, which is the church, comes together. That's why we only do a baptism separately in emergency situation. And this book has given you an areas where you can do emergency baptism. But basically, baptism is when you bring that child into the community. And when you baptize that child is given a name. When you take that child to the priest, they ask you to name the child. And then you call the child's name out. And so they call the child's name and baptize that child. When that,
is that the same name that has been given on the eighth day, or is it another name?
That's when it's in Ghana, now I'm using the whole word how the Anglican Church baptized a child. But in Ghana specifically, that's when you get your English name. So when I was baptized, that's when I got Rosina. So it became Rosina Araba Eche Ampa. I get four names because I have two from the family name of the 8 day when I was named. And then my father's name is Ampa. And so I carry that. And then my baptismal name is Rosina. And so being, you know, through school and everything, now people use Rosina more than anything wherever I go. But when I go to Ghana and I go home, they don't call me. They either call me Araba or they will call me Etri or Mami. They won't use that. But in terms of rituals, look at the traditional way. It's similar to our Christian baptism. That's when a child is baptized, the child is ushered into the community. That's when the child is brought into the church. The larger congregation gathers. The child has godparents who comes in and support the parents who are going to be helping the parents to raise that child in the Christian faith. And so that child is baptized, and when the child is baptized, finished, you show the child into the congregation. And there is a prayer to welcome that child into the congregation. It's no different than what the traditional religious people do, if even they are not Christians. That's another ritual, back to back. Sometimes when we are looking at it, we don't see it the same way. Each tradition is giving that child to God and to the community. And when that child is ushered in traditional way, if they are not Christians, the whole community is going to raise the child up. And they are going to teach the child the morals and everything that goes within the community that makes you a group or be able to live in the community. When the child is baptized into the Christian family, even sometimes we don't do a good job as Christians, because when that child does not come to church, how many people go after the children? I mean, let's say the truth. How many people go after the children? But because of the Ghanaian system and everything, nobody will agree to be a godparent if they don't have that time. If the mother doesn't come to church this Sunday, next Sunday, you will see somebody going into the house, finding out what has become of you. And if you are not feeling well, they will come and take the baby to church. They will come, collect the baby, put the baby on their back, and take the baby to church. And so when the baby is growing, the baby doesn't only know one mother, but the baby has lots of mothers who will take the baby to church, bring the baby, or take the baby out. And so they help raise that child within the ritual community as well as whatever else. But when we baptize a child as Christians, sometimes we don't even see the child again. Another ritual area that I want to balance with our Christian rituals is when the child comes of age. And a girl, the girl gets the first menstruation. The girl comes of age. A boy, in the ancient time, when the boy is matured enough and being able to go into hunting or into business, that's when the child comes of age. And so they will give the tools that the gentleman will need to establish himself. So there is also rituals that goes with that. And a girl, the girl will be sat in state for 8 days. People will come greet the girl. They will really treat her as a princess because the girl has moved from a young girl into adulthood. And so it's very important in the community that the very first day you see your period, you tell your mother, because it's a jubilation kind of celebration. And people will give you gifts. And then at the same time, when they are sitting you in state, they are telling the community, this is not a young kid anymore. This girl is matured. It has three purposes. Not only are they showing that to the physical world, my understanding of it from the traditional point of view is that they believe that angels guard us and watch over us at every stage in our lives. And at these stages, they change, it's like changing guards. And so it will be a shame to let the people who have guided you up till this point live without giving appreciation to the work they've done. And so you are saying goodbye to them as well as you are welcoming the ones who are going to come into your life and guide you through your marriage life and the rest of the stages as you go along. So it's very important. The 8 day is the same. And when I was a child, I was very inquisitive. So I was always asking questions. And the explanation understanding made sense to me that yes, God gives children very powerful angels to shepherd them and guide them, to protect them. And so when you move from one stage to another, it's important that whoever is coming, the old ones need to be thanked and say goodbye too. So that sitting in state and the jubilation has this ritual that goes with it. They will come together and they will cook. First they will cook yam and eggs, and they will pour libation with drink again, thank the ancestors that you are now a woman. You've moved to another dangerous area in your life of existence here, you can get pregnant anytime. And pregnancy sometimes comes with something else. Not everybody goes through pregnancy and delivery and survive. And so they pray for protection, and they pray for all kinds of things that the ancestors can do to help you as you are journeying toward that area. So that's when the community again come together. But they come together with a different purpose in mind. Number one, the men in the community are not just coming for fun. They are coming and they are looking at this woman also, if they are interested in the woman. And so they will approach their family to investigate into that. Maybe they want her for a wife. And so their family, the man cannot just go out there and say, I want this woman, or I love you, you better talk to your family. Because they are going to investigate into the background of the family before they allow the woman to come into that family, because they don't want an abusive kind of relationship. And if there is any indication of that, forget it. And I'm going to tell you a story that happened, and this is a true story, of a man who came and married a beautiful woman from one tribe. And they live in the farm, so in the morning when they were coming to perform their final rituals to take the woman home, they passed through the bush. But they were in such a hurry that the man was wearing sandals and these red ants. They passed through it and one got stuck to the toe. I mean, they were crawling all over them, and so they had to run from them, and they removed it. But there was one big one that stuck to the big toe, because it bit so hard that the beak or whatever it is went inside, and the head was stuck there with the ant sticking. And so they came and they sat down. They finished everything almost through when one of the uncles spotted the red ants on the man's toe. And he poked the net to Ken, who was sitting with him. He said, I'm not going to let this man marry my niece. And everybody was shattered. I mean, what's this craziness? We finished everything. We've almost come to conclusion. Why suddenly change your mind? And he said, I'm not going to allow my niece to go to this family or to marry this man. And everybody was, very upset with him. And he was very adamant. And so he called the others of his own family, tribe, inside and said, let me tell you something. When you go back in, look at the big toe of the supposed husband. What's there? And then I'll talk to you. So they came out. And they all spotted this, red big ant on the toe, dead, and still stuck there. And so they pointed out to the family that the reason why I'm not letting this niece to go into this family and to marry this man is that, look at his toe. This ant is on his body, and he doesn't feel it. Suppose it's on my niece's body. How will he feel it? If he doesn't feel his body enough to know that something is biting him, do you think he's going to have any feelings for my niece? I don't think so. And that was the cause of the whole breakdown of the marriage. And these are some of the things, you think it's not important. It is. How many women get into marriage and face abuse? And so to really get abusive kind of situation, I have seen over and over and over. You are not dealing with reality. You will have more men coming upon you than you anticipated by slapping somebody's daughter. And so these are some of the things they look into in Ghana before they will allow somebody to go and enter into a family. So that stage that the girl is sitting for that occasion in life is invitation that the woman is available, and at the same time is to tell the community to be careful in dealing with that young woman, because she's not a kid anymore. You cannot just, you know, abuse her or say rot things to her or anything. So it protects both the girl as well as the community. And if the girl herself is misbehaving with her attitude, they will call her and sit her down and say, hey, look, you've moved from childhood to adulthood, so throw this garbage out. At your stage, you don't need that. So you get instructions as you move on. I compare those that stage rituals with our confirmation in the church. We get the same rituals happening there, even though it's not an indication for the same purpose that this girl is matured enough to get married. But what we are saying is that this girl or boy is matured enough to stand up for his or her own faith. Your parents did the baptism for you. They made the promise for you. They made the vow for you. By this time you are coming to confirmation, you are coming to confirm what they did for you and accept responsibility. So when I teach confirmation class, I tell them, if you are not ready for responsibility, don't get yourself confirmed. I said, do you really understand what you are going to be saying? Do you know the responsibility you are taking on? From this day on, your mother is not going to wake you up to come to church. You have to be able to get yourself up to know that this is very important for you to get up to come to church. It's accepting responsibility. And we go through the same rituals. We bring them to church. The whole community gathers together. We invite the bishop to come in to lay their hands on them and give them a special blessing. And the whole community becomes part of the whole parcel. And from then on, we treat them as members, real members. Even though when they baptize, they are members, they don't have any responsibilities. It's the godparents who are responsible for those children. And by the time they get to confirmation, they are claiming for themselves, yes, I am matured enough, I want to be responsible. And so when I teach, I say to them, if you are not ready, please don't. Please don't. The same way, the third stage I want to compare with the tradition, then I'll open it up for questions and if any comments, is people going into marriage, and it's the same here. In Ghana, whether it's traditional or whether it's the church's wedding, is the same thing. The traditional religion, people will bring all the clothing and everything, and the day that the woman will move and go to the husband's house, she will go with a little sister or a friend who will go and be with her sometimes for 3 months. Just to be there and be available, because sometimes the husband works away from the village, and so when the girl gets there, the girl is going to be alone, and the girl is just going to know only the husband until they put down roots to know who is around. And so another younger sister will go, or you know, a friend will go, and sometimes be there for 3 months. Just be like a maid or a helper or somebody, just to get her to settle down into the marriage. And I believe the marriage here is the same, but the only difference is when you finish, you just take off for your honeymoon, you and your husband. You leave everybody else behind. And so it's like, you know, the two of us have moved from the family, so it's just us. But because of the community system at home, you are not going alone. You carry a family member with you. And there are times they will give you a younger child, young enough to stay with you. And so that child will become like your child, who will be with you and learn under you. And so that child just stays with you. And if you are lucky and you get pregnant quickly, that child will become the person who will be helping you carrying the baby. When you are busy working or doing something, the girl will carry the baby and take care of the baby for you. So you are not burdened with nobody there for you to be able. Or sometimes they will go home and deliver the baby and they will come back after the baby is 3 months old before they come back to where the husband works. So you always have available to you the community and the help you can get. As I said, it's the same wedding process, but here it's very different because people will marry and just move by themselves and then they start their lives together. But it's the same process. I believe they come and perform the wedding, you plan your wedding, and then you get the churches, you know, your wherever church, if you want to take it to the church for blessing, and you have this huge wedding, and you involve your friends who will become bridesmaids, and you know. So it's the same kind of ritual. And the last ritual is death. And we all, it's the same thing. The traditional people deal with death the same way the Christians deal with death. Okay.
Is there a bride price in Ghana?
There is one tribe, yes, that they do that. And that's the northern part of Ghana. When you go to Tamale and Yendi and the Eda area, they give a bride price, and sometimes they are cows because they are the rare cows. And so instead of a lot of money, they will bring in maybe 6 cows to for the woman as the woman's bride price.
Our daughter got married, the Namibian woman who lived with us for 4 years got married 6 months, and she sent us this photograph, and there was this ironic couple, because they have breakfast. Mm-hmm. She had, this is the cow I gave my name for.
Well, there's that wonderful Curcio story about the 9-cow bride. Are you familiar with that?
What?
The 9-cow bride.
No, I'm not.
I'm a little vague on how it goes, but basically, there was this very unattractive young woman in the tribe, and the parents were having great difficulty in marrying her off. Mm-hmm. And then there was this young man, and they figured they wouldn't get more than a cow or two for her at mm-hmm. the very best. And then this young man came along with 9 cows and mm-hmm. asked for her hand in marriage. And it was one of the Curcio stories that mm-hmm. indicated how much, how we are worth something. Mm-hmm. And he acknowledged her worth as mm-hmm. a human being and mm-hmm. took her as a bride. And also by giving more cows, this was gave him greater status because mm-hmm. he paid 9 cows for his bride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do that. Those, the northern part of Ghana, they have to really work hard and get that, or they won't get the woman.
Yeah. And the more they pay, the more priceless she is.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I have a question. Theoretically, ideally, mm-hmm. we who are baptized and brought up as Christians mm-hmm. Integrate our Christian life, our spiritual life, and our day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
Into one,
mm-hmm.
but you know how often this is true. I mean, I think we're all familiar with how mm-hmm. Separate mm-hmm. our spiritual
sure.
life
mm-hmm.
and our day-to-day life
sure.
really is when they should be one and
one. Mm-hmm.
To what extent is this true in Ghana? I mean, you talk about the community and the people
mm-hmm.
and their religion and
mm-hmm.
what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Is this just an automatic part of their living Is it that integrated with everyday life?
It is, because of the language even in using. I mean, you have to accept the fact that God is part of you in order to be able to use it in the language. And to be able to accept that, you are grounded somehow. And I think the ethos that Ghanaians carry is that there's no difference between your Sunday life and your weekday life.
So everyone acknowledges God.
Yes.
For an hour culture, you're free to or not.
Yes. What it is built into the culture, and people who go to Ghana always are surprised that even the cars, public transportation, will have these quotations from the Bible. And I've had people ask me, why do they do that? And I said, you cannot really tell a Ghanaian apart from God. Mm-hmm. I said, it's part and parcel of our life, of our daily life. And another thing is, because of that, they have a hope and a way where when they are hurting and in pain, they know where to go. You know, you go to God. God is the giver of everything. So you run to God and ask God to help you work through it.
Now, are these, I don't know how to phrase this question, but mm-hmm. The Ghanaian religious or spiritual life, mm-hmm. is it always Christian, or are there non-Christian Ghanaians who acknowledge God, but not in a Christian way?
Exactly. I broke them down. Let me go do it over again. There are 65% Christians, and those include Roman Catholic, Methodist, Lutherans, Baptist, Zion, you name whatever religion that calls upon Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. 65% of the whole country. Then you have 30% who are Islamics. They are Muslims. Mm-hmm. And then the 5% entails the other. And the other 5% include the traditional religion, including the Buddhists who are there, and whoever else has moved in there. We have Jehovah Witnesses there. And so that's 5% of the whole population. So you are talking of a majority. And even the government, when the government is doing something, they call upon the community to pray to God for help.
So in a sense, the Ghanaian
culture,
spiritual life culture,
is mixed up with everything else.
It's included in all of these percents that you...
Yeah, the day starts with morning prayer in the radio to wake people up. You will hear other, you know, different times at different churches singing, but you in the morning, what you will hear first is a religious service, and then they will have the music, then they will have the news. Before you go to bed at night, the television, the last thing on television is service. Service.
Service. Oh.
And you have meditation to take you to bed.
Wow.
In your lifetime, has there been any shift in this religious cultural integration? In my lifetime, mm-hmm. growing up on a rural farm to mm-hmm. now, our culture has shifted tremendously. I can mm-hmm. think of when I was a boy, mm-hmm. you know, young people getting married they would go off on a honeymoon, they would come back into the community, and they had mm-hmm. a thing called a shivery where they were, you know, it was just so different than mm-hmm. now. Now you really are just off on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But that's happened, you know, in mm-hmm. 50 years, 60 years. Mm-hmm. Has it shifted any in Ghana?
I think what has shifted at the moment for me as a Ghanaian is that people now, when they go abroad and work, they will come home with their wives. And now the community has to accept them. And I have seen about three or four. One of my uncles went to England and married a British woman. So I have cousins who are white. Mm-hmm. And I have a magazine in Augusta that I just got from, it's West African magazine. There was a chief who was installed in his tribe because it has come, it has reached his turn, and he's already married a white woman from Germany. And so they went home and they installed the woman as the head of the tribal women. And so she wrote the article. And so she said, now my turn is to learn how to really be the leader of these women. And I don't know left from right. So I think that that's an area where I think it's changing. That these days people go out, and when they are out there, you know, they will come and then they will convince the family that, you know, this is the person I really love, and we will, you know, get along, and the family accepts them. But in the ancient time, they really have to dish behind it. So there has been some changes, but the religious part is intact. You were going to ask a question here.
What about circumcision?
Circumcision is done on the eighth day.
Male.
If you were a boy.
Male
yeah.
only.
Huh?
Male only.
Yeah, male only. There was a tribe in Ghana, what's the name of them? They are also on the Niger border, Burkina Faso and Ghana. There was a tribe, small tribe on the border, then they used to circumcise women. And so the Ghanaian culture, I think, has stepped in. And now that tradition is dying out. But yeah, there was a one single tribe along the border that used to circumcise
so
women too.
Between tribes?
Oh, vast. It's like day and night. It's like day and night, really. Because, you know, it's very different tribe. And the tribe actually, the coming together of believing in God and everything is the same wherever you move in Ghana. Okay, the way they do their initiation is very different. But it's the same time too, when the child is born and when the child comes of age. But they do it very differently. And unless you really know the tribe, you won't know it. But you will recognize it when they are doing that, that the girl has had a period. And the girl is coming of age. So, you have more than 100 tribes.
What age are most girls when they get married?
It differs from each person or each tribe. For example, if you are not educated, in the ancient time, when girls did not go to school, 18. In the Ashanti area, I think it will be 16. They will give them off to marriage. They always say that the Fantas were spoiled by the Westerners, because when the Westerners came in, they came into the coast. So they always say that the Fantas were spoiled. The Fantas always want to go to school and work. And so sometimes they marry late. And it also depends on when you have your period. For example, my mother didn't have a period until she was 18. Okay. And so most of us girls in the family started 17, 16 to have our period. The earliest in our family, in lines of girls, had her period when she was 13. And we thought suddenly the whole, you know, earth has fallen down. Why did she got it that early? And so when I heard that, you know, even 9 years old, people, I said, my word, you know, how come? But it depends on, you know, when you have that period. And then they will.
He's not too bad.
Is there any difference in the church services from there, the Christian service, the Eucharist from in Ghana and here?
No, not really. The Anglican Church, as people have said over and over, they say that the Ghanaian Anglican Church is more Britain than the British itself. You have this high incense and all the bells and you name it. Very high church, and those who are not actually in an area where they will have the organ and things, they use the drums and sing, do the local music. And they have, you know, the singing band and things like that. But it's not different. They say we really were carbon copies of the British.
Do you do the liturgy in English?
Yes, we do the liturgy in English, and then we do it once a month in the local language. But in the villages, they do it in the local language. But basically, in the cities and in coast, it's all in English. And when they do the one Sunday in vernacular, they have interpreter who will do it in English, the sermon. They will do the sermon in English, and then they will interpret it, because there are some elderly women who did not go to school. And so basically they will have to hear the sermon. But they've done the hymn book in the vernacular and in English. And so when the service is being done in English, they follow the vernacular.
Is there a seminary in Ghana?
Yes.
Seminary?
Yes, we have a ecumenical seminary in Accra, and then we have the Anglican seminary in Cape Coast. It's a very small seminary, but St. Nicholas, but is there.
What about medical schools and law schools? You spoke the other day about many
lawyers
and lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have three universities in Ghana, and then we have colleges and secondary schools. Education came to Ghana very quickly because of the gold that was discovered there. And so we have two teaching hospitals. And Eburi. Okay, we have about four teaching hospitals, but two are the ones that people always go to for training. And then we have Akwetia, which is a mining area. And because it's mining area, and the wounds are, you know, always, you know, mining, this will fall and this, they have very high-skilled doctors from Czechoslovakia, India, United States, and other countries pile up there. So when there is something really difficult, they will take them to Akwetia Hospital. So, and some are trained, most of them are trained abroad, believe it or not. England, Germany, Russia. I have a half-brother who is a doctor, and he was in Russia for 25 years. He just came home, gynecologist.
Did you go to seminary in Ghana? Or
no, I did all my studies here.
Where?
New York. I did my BA in BA at College of New Rochelle, School of New Resources, and then I went to New York Theological Seminary and took the Anglican studies from General. General Theological Seminary. So I did all my studies, actually. I came here with high school education. And even that, they said, because I finished school for 23 years, I have to take the GED again here, because they want to grade it with them.
Oh my.
So that's how far I start. Far back I started.
How do you mean?
Is your home now here in the United States?
I am partly here and partly in Ghana.
What is your passport?
My
passport. Part of you is in Ghana.
I have my Ghanaian passport, and also I haven't changed my citizen. I only have green card, and every 4 years I go home, and I'm waiting till they have dual citizenship. And if they do that, I'll do it. If not, I'm not going to do it. So I'm full Ghanaian, but I live here. Yes.
Do you have in Ghana? Do you have much incidence of pregnancies outside of marriage, and how does that handle in the community?
A few. In the ancient time, the culture that really deals with it harshly is the Ashantis. And I think they are coming around too on that. In the ancient time, that's a taboo. Because when you get yourself pregnant outside of marriage, if they have already set you in state, it's acceptable. If they have already put you in state and shown to the public that, yes, you've moved from childhood to womanhood, that's acceptable. But the man better be careful, because the family is going to skin him alive. All the money in his family is going to be taken.
For fornication is not
acceptable. Yes, they call it domufal. Domufal means you just put your hand in and took it without permission. And so they're going to charge you for that. And so, people really are very careful with these things, because they will charge you domufa. The father will say, well, you didn't ask anybody's permission and you just took it. So you have to pacify the family before you come and knock on the door that you want this child, you want this girl. And so it was very serious. But if that has not been done, and you are pregnant, the Ashantis took it so seriously that they will let the girl leave the tribe completely, you and the child, because they won't want to see the child in that tribe, because they said it's an evil omen. Mm-hmm. You never reported you've come to womanhood. How did you get pregnant? And so, they just drive them away from the tribe. But now I think, people are coming around with that.
How about the fathers? Do they send the father away with the mother and the child?
No, because the girl won't tell. If the girl didn't tell, she had the period, the girl is not going to tell. And so sometimes the man may leave and go with a girl, or sometimes a girl will just, leave. Mm-hmm. And that's, but now I think they also have come to realize that, they can scold them, but they don't have to drive them away from the tribe. But the Fantis will ask you until you tell who did it. And as I said, when they find a man, boy, the man is going to have to have a lot of confession to make.
And they shotgun weddings.
Oh yes, you're going to. And when that happens, and they really get you, and you admit the child is yours, that's another part of it. You're going to have a hard time saying, "I don't want to marry this woman." Mm-hmm. You're stuck with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You stuck with her. And that's why it's important for the, to ask the family to investigate. Maybe you met her, you love her, and then you went in, have sex together, she's pregnant, and then discovered that, there's something either behind his back or his family or your family that the two of you don't want to come together. But you stuck.
Why
do
you take
chances?
Yeah.
And the divorce rate, is there divorce?
Yes, there are some divorces, and the divorce rate is not that high. But now that most women are highly trained and professionals, sometimes they either choose not to get married. It's just like here, there are certain segments, about 5 or 7%, mm-hmm. who will rather you know, work than to marry. And sometimes they will meet another professional person and then they will decide to either marry or they will just, you know, have their children. Just like here, it's a very small segment. But divorce rate is very small. And what will create a divorce is when the girl gets to the family and there is a problem that the family won't accept either the man or the girl. You don't want to really damage the children that will come between them. I'm one of those divorcees. And I opted for the divorce myself because the man is from a different tribe and I am from a different tribe. And the marriage happened because of my brothers, because they were friends with the man. And when he took me home, the family didn't like me. They said that it's too far away. And look at all these rituals that we have to do. How can we every time travel to the coast? And we live in the mountains. So they weren't prepared to do that. And he said, you know, I'm old enough, I'm matured, I'm working, so what's your problem? I want her. I love her and I married her, so just forget it. But you don't marry for yourself alone. You marry for the community and the family. And so I, you know, there was hostility there. And I decided to wait and see, maybe they will change. And I stayed for 10 years. And they still didn't change their mind. They were always asking questions, when are you going to marry home? And so I finally said, he's your son, you can have him. I'm not your daughter, so I'm out of here. So I packed my bag and I left.
So what accomplishes the divorce? The tribe, the state?
Actually,
each other and say, I divorce you.
Well, sometimes it will happen between the two of them, and then they will take it home. They will work through and take it home. But the family gets involved, especially if there are children. There are children in there. Either the family will try to convince both of you, for the sake of the children, to live together. But when they go into the situation and look into the pieces and decide, no, I think it will be better to separate the two of you, but the children belong to us. So the two of you can have yourself.
But what legalizes the divorce? The family or the state?
The family, actually. And if it's a wedding, it's the court.
And if what?
If you are a wedded wife, you have to go to court. But basically, the family will do that. Because you see, you don't want to wash your dirty linen in the public. Mm-hmm. And that's why always you have the family to bounce off things on. You have them to, you know, and so it's not an offense to go to the woman's parents when there's something happening and say to them, this is what is happening, please advise her. Because this may not lead us anywhere. Or for the woman to go to the in-laws and say, this is what your son is doing. Can you say something about it? Or your sister-in-laws will come in and fight for you. If the sisters-in-law love you, and the brother-in-laws, oh boy, the man is at war. Because, he has a lot to deal with. The same way, the woman has a lot to deal with. Yes.
The families help the two stay together.
Yes.
There's going to be a separation.
Yes.
Worse than maybe.
Yes, that's right. They try to help them to work the things out together. And if it doesn't work, then they will ask them that it's okay, you can separate. But when you separate, the families are still together. You know, you brought us together, so we are going to be together. So if the two of you don't want to agree, you can have your part. You can go. And so, you see, even you divorce, but you still attach. to the family.
But not to the man.
Not to, yeah, exactly. So it's exactly. Sort of like this, I still, when I'm home, I visit my brother-in-laws. Actually, I'm going to stay with my brother-in-law in England next year when I go. That's why I take my vacation when I'm on my trip back and forth from Ghana and here. You know, he's even named a child after me. So I'm still, you know, respected in the family. I lived there for 10 years. I raised lots of kids. Their, you know, nieces and nephews stayed with me. Two of them are doctors in Russia now. One is in Australia. So you think they're going to forget me? No.
Do you have children of your own?
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, I lost my own children. I have an adopted one who is a priest. And then one was murdered 12 years ago, when he was 23. So, and that was the last one of my own.
So. The only one of your, that you gave birth to?
Yeah, I had two girls, twins, and they died also. So, you will never know the scars on my back, but they are all there. So, but because of the spiritual background and the spirituality and of how God was integrated in my life, it has really helped me to move beyond the pain, to still be who I am, or I'll be dragging myself in the dirt. Any questions? If not, I think it's time to come to a conclusion. So, the tape is off. Thank you all for coming.
Thank
and thank you for coming.